streaming is up and running again. Thank you, ladies. Agenda item 2 is open public comment. We have a number of people that have signed up. I'd like to call you up 3 at a time, if I may. You get 3 minutes, and unless you're an elected official.
You're supposed to say 2 at a time. Give them plenty of space.
Say again?
We need to call them up 2 at a time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 2 at a time. I stand corrected. Thank you, ladies. Jeannie Becker and Frank Palmer.
Okay, they're outside, so let's go to the next two.
Okay.
Court or something.
Okay. All right, we'll go then to John Klassen and Doug Baldwin. Good morning. Take it away, please.
Good morning.
Let's see if everybody can hear me. Coming through okay? Good. Thank you for this opportunity to share my concerns with regards to gill netting. My name is John Clausen. I live in communities that I'm a member of the Clearwater Flycasters, who serves community at the Washington-Idaho border. Our club serves in the following capacities. It teaches and advocates fly casting for the benefit of the community, and also engages in conservation projects that involves enhancing our fisheries. My home waters, anyway, include the Clearwater, the Snake, the Grand Ronde. Sometimes I make excursions to the Salmon River. And I'm primarily a trout fisherman as well as a steelhead fisherman. I'm concerned about the degradations that are occurring in our runs that have occurred recently. We're not meeting our SAR rates to preserve our fisheries in various watersheds. And in the last 2 years, we've either restricted or closed opportunities to fish for anadromous fish. And this has caused a great deal of fear in our communities, and particularly for those that provide guiding services on the waters that I described earlier. It's clear that our communities are focusing on restoration plans and in order to preserve our fisheries. But I want to say adamantly that these plans should not include in any form a gill netting because it destroys indiscriminately ESA-listed fish that are a key to preserving our fisheries. This comes about because the mesh size is small, and the soak times on the nets, that is the periods at which the nets remain in the water, are in excess of 20 minutes, and that invariably kills wild fish indiscriminately when the target of the fish is more likely to be a salmon. We are concerned in our communities, particularly the guides, and they're reaching at all sorts of looking for a solution. But what we're experiencing is the loss in the numbers in the run. Last year, run on wild steelhead was 12,000. This year, it's 8,000. We're fearing the extinction of that population of fish entirely.
Please wrap up your comments.
Yeah, I have one more to make. And that gill netting has caused the run of fish to be smaller year after year. We used to catch fish, steelhead, that ranged in poundage from 15 to 20 pounds. Now it's more like from 10 to 15. And we used to catch fish in excess of 20 pounds in our earlier steelhead derbies. So that's what I want to share with you.
Thank you very much. Doug?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioners and Superintendent Kelly. I'm a member of Clearwater Flycasters Conservation Chair there for many years. And we're just communities all around Southeast Washington, Idaho Panhandle, are struggling from economic loss because of season closures. We have an outfitter who's lives in Clarkston, Washington. The moment closure for steelhead was announced last year on the Clearwater, he lost 70% of his 2019 income. And year prior to that, he lost 50% on the closure because of the Idaho's problem with NOAA fisheries not getting their permit signed in time. And that's just one example out of many from all the communities back there. We need to get more fish back to where they come from. And returning nets to the main stem Columbia River is worse than counterproductive. It just should not be, and we hope you guys will understand that if we can't get them back to where their birth site, you're not going to have them anymore. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Next two, please, are Mike Estes and Tyler Camo, if I got that right. Right? Close enough? Okay.
Racks in your front.
Mike first and then Tyler, please.
Good morning, everyone. I would just like to take this opportunity to thank the Commission for being here today. Not in Olympia. I think it's a great tradition to continue to hold meetings outside of the Capitol. I apologize for the low attendance, but I don't think it's my fault. I'm guessing that concern about potential health impacts have really detracted, because I want to assure you, myself, other members of the Richland Run Gun Club, which I represent, other sportsmen in the area are very interested in the topics that are on your agenda today. Fish and wildlife, extremely important to most of us, I would hope all of us in the state of Washington, and you fill a very important role. So having public representatives, I know there's an increased cost and effort involving bringing the commission here, and also Director Sussewind and his staff to Eastern Washington, but based on past meetings that I've attended that you've held or the commission has held in Moses Lake and Spokane, and I think the last one that's scheduled here in the Tri-Cities got canceled a few years ago because they were trying to hire some guy that was willing to take the job of leading the charge. But anyway, I just hope you have a very productive session. I know that the topics, like I say, whether it's elk hoof diseases or what the migratory waterfowl seasons are going to be, the white goose hunt that just ended, I think I had an opportunity to talk to staff a little bit this morning, but that was an experiment, not as successful as I think it's going to need to be going into the future, not as much harvest as needs to occur to prevent future, perhaps, who knows what's going to happen with that population of geese. But anyway, I wish you a good day, and sorry for the low turnout.
Thank you for the nice welcome. Tyler?
Hey. Good morning, Chair Carpenter, Vice Chair Baker, Commissioners, and Director Suswind. Thank you for the opportunity to be able to testify today, even under the obviously interesting circumstances right now. My name is Tyler Como, and I'm here on behalf of Coastal Conservation Association and our members from across the state of Washington. Our organization would like to reiterate our concerns over the recent agreement on 2020 Columbia River fisheries with ODFW. The agreement allows for a spring chinook tangle gillnet fishery on the lower main stem for the first time since 2016. With such a low projected return, I believe the second lowest projected since the 90s, we should be prioritizing a conservative management approach that foregoes non-selective tangle gillnetting. Observed bycatch and release mortality rates in the spring chinook tangle gillnet fishery are higher than marked selective recreational fisheries. That means additional ESA-listed wild spring chinook mortalities for the same number of targeted hatchery spring chinook. That's not to mention the high mortality rate that's been observed on ESA-listed steelhead encountered in tangle nets. Implementing tangle gill nets, quite frankly, is a step in the wrong direction for the resource. It puts further strain on already struggling stocks of fish. Simply put, they're the wrong gear, in our opinion, at the absolute worst time. I appreciate your service. Thank you again for being here today, and thank you for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Mr. Anderson, do you have a question?
I have a question. So are you addressing both tangle nets and gill nets?
Yes, tangle gill nets and standard.
So you don't consider tangle nets alternative gear?
Do not, no.
Mr. McIsaac?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks again for your testimony. You referenced the difference in mortality rate, the released mortality rate, or the non-selectivity of the tangle net fishery. So, there are measured catch and release mortality rates for both the sport fishery and the tangle net fishery that are within the same range of each other. And it's my understanding that the tangle net fishery does have catch and release boxes and that unmarked fish are released. So could you say a little bit more about why or what your impression is about the catch and release mortality and the non-selectivity of a tangle net fishery?
Yeah, frankly, the tangle gill nets are, it is still a higher rate than a marked selective recreational fishery. And quite frankly, with this ESA run right now, as far as the projections that we're looking at and the numbers of fish coming back, it's concerning we'd be using anything other than the lowest possible terms. And that would include potentially using other, you know, doesn't take into effect or into account the potential of using other gear types instead of tangle gill nets. So I believe we should be using the lowest possible harvest methods right now and try to get as many fish back upriver into the spawning grounds, especially in a year like this year.
Commissioner Thorburn?
Are you saying tangle and gill nets or tangle gill nets?
Tangle gill nets. I mean, I know there is slightly, they are a slightly different material, but the fact of the matter is they fish in a very similar way. And right now, unless I'm wrong, they're being used as a gear type right now without, they don't have any special permitting. Gill nets right now, I believe, are the only legal way to fish on the Columbia unless you have a special permit. So in my opinion, or based off that definition, I would assume these are considered gill nets by the state, and that's, you know, that would be my understanding of that. Thank you.
Well, the way I look at gill nets is they're called that because they gill, and tangle nets, as my fellow commissioner was just pointing out, they pull live fish out of them and put them in a box to throw them back. So I just think it's a misnomer to say tangle gill nets. They're tangle nets. They're very different in how they affect fish, at least as I understand it, than gill nets.
My concern would be at any point right now we need to be taking as many precautions as possible at this run, and also the bycatch rates and the mortality rates on studies on the gill nets, at least in ESA listed steelhead or in steelhead, have been high on mortality rates alone, and we know our ESA, our steelhead, have been suffering as well. So last few years runs, the trend line's not good. I think we should be taking as many precautions as possible to make sure we get these fish back and continue to have build our runs back up. So thank you very much, I appreciate it.
Okay, all right, thank you. Sam Ledgerwood and
no.
Jay Hose Miller.
What? Give it to Sven, he can mess it up.
You're down to 3 seconds, huh? Nice to see you. Go ahead, Sam, please.
Representing the Worsting Cattlemen Association here today. I'd like to thank the commission for having this meeting here. You know, don't particularly, where we live and what we do, we don't particularly like to come to Olympia, but we feel the need for it time to time, so appreciate the fact that we can testify here in Pasco today, or excuse me, Kennewick. I'd like to talk to the commission about land management in general. While as a landowner, I personally have done fish projects on streams. I know several private landowners do fish projects on stream, and that's all part of land management. But there's a lot bigger picture of land management for managing, particularly shrub steppe, but all lands. The game department owns over 1 million acres of land, and I would appreciate the commission to put more value on the management of the lands, and depending on the terrain and type of land, whether it be timber or shrub steppe, whatever, there's various tools, various ways to manage land that would sustain the land in keeping it a healthy habitat for fisheries, birds, you know, all species. That said, you know, ungulate populations need to be managed along with and in balance with the predator population. You know, we're going to get into that later on today, but the overall predator population has to have a food supply, and that would need to be managed. The ungulate population, unfortunately, as cattlemen, we get the overspill if there's not an adequate food supply for the predators. So, and it becomes a human safety issue because we live out there in them terrains. You know, several of the membership of the cattlemen's, their kids walk to the bus and stand next to the road in rural areas. So it's a safety issue as well. So I would like to see the commission work closely with the counties. The economic factor of managing your land, be it timber management, grazing, fire, whatever, is a big impact on our small counties. I have land in Assotin and Garfield counties. These counties are economically challenged, and when we have large acreages of game department land that are unmanaged, there's no dollars flowing through the communities, and that's really hurting our tax base. Our commissioners need to be consulted and considered in these counties. Thank you.
Thank you, Sam. Mr. Holzmiller, you can take as much time as you like.
I'm going to ask you to read my comment, what I'm going to, that's on, I put on the paper.
I can't read that. Oh, okay. We're in session. He's going to give us the business, I guess.
Well, there again, you guys all got this close and worked in the trenches and fought in the trenches with all of you, and you weren't going to get this close. I need to come down and see you in person, if nothing else, and won't get into a lot of deep subjects because a fair amount of you get bored to death with me, and I'm sure when you look at your caller ID and see that I'm calling, you go, oh my God. So anyway, so I'm in contact with a bunch of you on a pretty regular basis, which I enjoy. Where to start? I guess the first thing is the crowd's a little sparse this morning, but I think it's going to pick up considerably this afternoon. And the one thing that I would, and not to imply that you don't, but just listen to these people because they have traveled quite a ways, a lot of them. They're volunteering their time. They're doing this all on their own dime. And people are really concerned about our big game herds. They truly are. And as Sam just mentioned, having 150 elk out in my oat field isn't a desirable deal, but last summer I never saw an elk. And then all of a sudden, that starts putting pressure on us because the wolves and the lions are going to be do what they do, and they're not going to turn vegan when the big game herds are in peril. And I love to hunt, too. And it's just our big game herds are in dire straits. Granted, we had a couple of tough winters, but that's part of game management. You've got to factor that in there. And we've got so much pressure on our big game herds right now with the predation. Then you catch a couple of bad winters. It's going to be tough. The white-tailed deer will bounce back, but the mule deer and the elk are very imperiled. As most of you know, spent 5-6 years here debating and discussing the wolf issue. Well, here about a month ago, it became real world in my world. And there again, did all the preventatives that we thought we needed to do. And I got a real freaking awakening on that. Because the fox lights kept the coyotes at bay for about 10 days, which, you know, you can, and I was just trying to test this out. The wolves were there at my place twice. They were gone for 17 days. The first night the wolves showed back, the first thing they did, we had enough snow that you could track, and that was where I was really fortunate because I was lucky actually to catch the calf that I lost, because if it had been a year ago, I'd been on a road grader, I'd never caught it. But I noticed it, picked up on it, and we had snow enough that you could track the whole scene out. I mean, Ray Charles could have made the call on this one. It was just a slam dunk on that it was a wolf predation. But, and then after that, every day I would ride my entire perimeter, and I'd even jump to pick up and spin around and make certain, I'll close it out here in just a sec, that, you know, what was coming and going. When the wolves come back to my point, the first damn thing they did, it was just like that was a disco ball out there. Walked up within 12 feet of that fox light, sat there and stared at it a bit, backed around, went out to 26 feet, flopped there in the snow and just stared at it. I don't know, guys. We got to do what we got to do, but we can't put our whole deal on this preventative because it's only going to go so far. And I absolutely had to change how I was doing business 100%. I love to feed my cows out in my hay fields because every cow pie that falls out in the field is an asset. When it falls in the draw in a confinement area, is a liability. And I just had to bunch cows every night. Finally, after we got the calves started getting a little older, they get a little faster, we had more of them, then I started kicking them back out. But I mean, this has different effects. And I mean, it just became your damn life. And it's one thing if we're talking in a range situation up on a mountain, but for criminy sakes, these wolves were 100 yards from my damn house. And I mean, I did everything I could to spread human scent around. I thought maybe we could keep them back, but it didn't work. But anyway, you guys have a long day ahead of you. Good to see all of you. And thanks for answering my phone calls when I call. And we'll talk at lunch.
Thank you, Jay. Okay, the last two I have on this item are Al Rinaldi and Charles Amran.
Amran.
Hey, welcome.
Hello. Hi. Go ahead, let this gentleman speak first, if it's all right.
Good morning, gentlemen. I expected to testify it this afternoon on the elk issue. I don't know.
Okay, well, it says 2 and 9, I guess, so. Just 9?
Just 9.
Well, while you're standing there, do you have anything to say? Otherwise, we'll go on to the other gentleman.
No, I can keep quiet. It's pretty hard to do. Okay.
We'll see you in a bit. Thank you. Charles.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much for hosting this meeting. I very much appreciate it. Like you, I sit on a commission, but nothing so grand or as well-funded as a state-level department. I'm just simply a county commissioner in Columbia County. I'm here today because I actually have that ability as a county commissioner to spend my time going to meetings, whereas the vast majority of the people in my county are busy working right now and cannot make these meetings. Unfortunately, they're going to try for... Is the meeting still on Saturday?
You, sir, do not get limited to 3 minutes because you are a...
Oh, well, thank you very much.
The meeting on Saturday
has been canceled. Has been canceled? So I guess I'm here to speak for the people of my county that can only meet in the evenings after the field work's done. I'm here to speak for some of the other commissioners in counties further away, Garfield and Asotin. I wouldn't begin to speak for the rest of them, but I do know after many talks with many commissioners, and this is something we talk about at the Eastern Washington Council of Governments also, which is a meeting of county commissioners that takes place, that this is a very real concern when we deal with the policies of the Fish and Wildlife Department. It's very real for us where I live, as Mr. Holzmiller was talking about. We do have predation. We do have children that are afraid. You know, we don't want to put them out on those school bus stops without, you know, a parent in a car waiting there with them. I know that we teach our children young not to turn your back on a cougar ever. We know, I mean, these are things you have to teach, I guess, to children. And I don't know what we tell them about wolves. I know how to respond to bears and how to respond to cougars, but they haven't had a run-in with a wolf yet, and we don't know quite what they're going to do. It's going to be very sad when it happens. But that's not really what I'm here to speak about so much as the economic impact of what the predation on the elk herds are doing. Now, I don't know how you feel about the elk herds. I know they're a foreign species, if you will, introduced in 1929 by local sportsmen, and maybe you view them as an invasive species that needs to be eradicated. But there was a whole culture built up around them of hunting, of service industry related to the hunting and things like that. You know, I'm sure there's problems involved with, you know, depredation on oat fields, things like that, but they were a part of how we were and how we lived. The introduction of the wolves have basically destroyed that. I don't know, maybe you don't get up to the blues very much to see, but I remember taking people there just 10 years ago to say, oh, you want to see what elk look like? And taking them up to the blues, and big herds of elk roaming the hills. You know, not a, just park and watch, you could see them. I no longer hunt. A large number of people in my community no longer hunt. We no longer see the hunters come to our area. Again, in some ways I view this as a feature, not a bug. I mean, if you don't like the elk because they're invasive, okay, I got that. And you want to get rid of them with the wolves, I got that. I'll see that. But please do understand that we kind of sort of had a way of life based around them, you know, since 1929. So please do, when you're thinking about your policies with predators and how you're going about this, that while I know these Arctic wolves aren't the same as the gray wolves that were here before, I know you're trying to reintroduce a wolf thing back, I guess. I get that. But it also endangers our children and our people. I mean, it's one thing to have this, you know, I know you deal with more than just wolves and elk and things like that. I apologize if I'm a little wolf-centric here. But this is something that affects us every day, you know. And we really would appreciate you looking at a way to deal with it. I do appreciate you coming so I can actually see how the process works. Before, it was Governor and then Mr. Pazenga right over there. That's all we knew about it. And, you know, and people will come to me and say, hey, what are we going to do about this? And I'm like, I don't know. We talked to Mr. Pazenga, and the governor doesn't take my calls. Well, now he's taking my calls, but it's not about this. So, you know, it's appreciate you coming down and getting a chance to see you all face-to-face. Please do, again, consider the economic impacts of what you're doing. There are second and third order effects. Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time and coming to speak to us. Commissioner Thorburn.
Thanks so much for your comments. You reminded me that as I gave the Wildlife Committee report, I overlooked one of the topics that we started off with, and that was the status of our elk herds. We are very concerned. There are very concerning numbers that we're getting with our population studies. So it's totally on our radar. We are not trying to eradicate elk at all. They're very important to the commission, to the department. And I also want to just acknowledge your comments about rural life and how important our game herds are to our rural communities. And also, your stories about kids and our predators remind me of recent trip that I took up toward Abercrombie, I'm in the Northeast, and I went up toward Abercrombie Mountain where there was a cougar attack. It's been a number of years on a young child, and I saw one of the school bus stops with a hurricane fence around it. So, you know, to me, that really speaks to what you're talking about.
Well, you know, before I was a commissioner, I was in the military, and the military teaches you that, you know, you can delegate authority but not responsibility. You folks do have the responsibility for what happens with these, you know, these wolves. When what they do, I mean, people will come to me railing, you know, the first time someone is hurt, and all I can say is, you know, the governor doesn't care what I have to say, but he does care what you have to say. So please do consider them, please. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. We had some that were not here earlier, but now are back, so we'll take these next three, two at a time. Janine Becker and Frank Palmer first. Janine, you're first.
Okay. People have trouble hearing me, so I have to get right up there. Thank you for letting us talk. I'm Jeannie Becker. I'm both from Lincoln and Stevens counties. We have an overpopulation of wolves. It is changing our way of life. It is causing a noticeable reduction in wildlife. They are killing livestock, farm animals, and even pets. They are a threat to our children. Our family was raised in the mountains near Chihuahua. My home now borders that same property my mother still owns. Hunting, fishing, hiking, and exploring has always been an important part of our family's life. Hunting has been for food, not sport. I have witnessed an obvious decline in deer and moose in our area. I believe this is due to the overpopulation of both wolves and cougars. I believe this is due, the nature of wolves is common knowledge. They are a killing machine. They run in packs, and the packs multiply quickly. They kill wildlife, farm animals, pets, and they will kill people. Our children and elderly are most vulnerable. A man and his daughter were walking in the Sedona area. They were confronted by a wolf. The father shot the wolf with a shotgun. That wolf would have had to been extremely close for a shotgun to kill it. My sister has seen a wolf near her home, well, near her and my 90-year-old mother's shared home. My brother saw one near their home as well. There are wolf tracks all around their house. Mom is afraid to let her dogs out. I'm afraid for Mom to get out. If a wolf or cougar come after my mother or my dog, my mom's dog, Mom would be right in the middle of it. We often hear wolves. They sound real close to the house. I try not to leave my cats out. And absolutely, kids are in danger right now in our own backyards. The same areas I played in as a child, I'm now afraid to have my grandchildren play. Ranchers from all over are reporting wolves killing their livestock. Farm animals and pets are being killed. A rancher near Sprague killed a wolf he saw going after his cattle. As early as 2011, problems of decline in deer population was being discussed, thought to be due to the increase of predators. Wolves have been placed on the endangered list. They are not endangered. What they are is a danger to wildlife, cattle, farm animals, our very own way of life, and most importantly, our children. Something needs to be done. The Colville Tribe of Indians sees the threat and allows hunting wolves on their land. Idaho is aggressively addressing the wolf threat. Washington State needs to do the same and do it right away, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Frank?
Frank Palmer. Stevens County. It is just unbelievable to me that wolves are still considered endangered. It's unbelievable they were ever considered endangered. Wolves are vicious killers, and it's obvious their prey is very low. History proves humans are next, and children are most vulnerable. World War I, wolves got to killing armed soldiers. They had a ceasefire, joined forces, and killed hundreds of wolves. From 1944 to 1954 in Russia, many people lost their lives to wolves. It is no secret what hungry wolves do. Our game department should know this. So why? Why do we have to beg for control? December 13th, 2018, a relative of mine ran over a wolf on I-90 near Sprague, killed it. Washington State Patrol responded. February 11th or 12th this year, a log truck ran over a wolf right at the city limits of Fruitland, killing it. My son, a log truck driver, he had a job for 3.5 months up east of Colville, saw one deer in 3.5 months, two wolves and gobs of wolf tracks. Figure that one. Wolves are endangered. I looked up wolf attacks in North America. Page 1 of 40 says only 2 verified fatal attacks. Page 2 of 40 through 9 of 40 looks to me like way more than 40 and very convincing stories. When the government classified wolves endangered, a quota was set, needing a certain number of packs and breeding pairs. Magically, in an incredibly short period of time, the endangered wolf has saturated us. I get it. It's simple. Satan is winning and hates humans, pets, livestock, small and big game, etc., but loves wolves and predators. So, they simply oozed up from hell. Thank you.
Thank you for coming in. The last today, an open public comment is Mark Kimmel.
Yes, my name is Mark Kimmel.
I got a question. When are you guys going to update your feel free to hunt signs, hunt with permission by landowner? All them signs out there are faded away. Half the time the farmers are not even farming it, which was originally on it. And two, boundaries. I went up to Hatton here this last fall, elk hunting, and there's a feel free hunt sign, green. My partner and I walked towards it and started out, and all of a sudden had a rancher come up to us and say, "Don't go to the right of that sign. It's my property, and I don't want you on it." There was no fence line, no marker, no nothing. So if you want young people to be able to hunt and take into the sport, maybe you guys need to update your signs. That's all I have.
Thank you very much. I'm sure staff heard you and appreciate your comments. That wraps up our open public input for today. I want to thank the public for coming in and speaking to us. It's the only way we learn and hear on a face-to-face basis.